This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In recent months, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has cracked down on factories, farms, and restaurants across the United States. In raid after raid, officers have found and arrested alleged undocumented laborers who, they say, were working in the United States illegally. After the ICE raids, these communities and the businesses they worked in have changed. Immigrant workers often pack up and leave. Some return to their home country. Others relocate to places they hope may be friendlier. Still others go into hiding. And employers have to find new workers, which often isn't easy. Part of the idea is to prompt calls for immigration reform, and that, at least, appears to be working. If there have been immigration raids in your community, call and tell us what's happened afterwards. What's been the effect on your workplace and on your town? Our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we're joined now by Stephen Greenhouse, the labor and workplace correspondent for the New York Times. In a story last week, he wrote about how immigration raids have changed the small town of Tar Heel, North Carolina, where Smithfield Foods is based. Stephen Greenhouse, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here, Neil.
Tell us a little bit about Tar Heel, North Carolina, and about what happened there.
Tar Heel is a very small town in southeast South Carolina. It has the world's largest hog slaughtering plant. It kills 32,000 hogs a day, and it employs more than 5,000 people, many of them Hispanic, many of them African-American, some of them white, some Lumbee Indians. Beginning last November, a crackdown began at the plant. First, the plant sent out no-match letters to 640 workers saying, your Social Security numbers, your documents don't seem valid. Then last January, 21 people were arrested at the plant. They were told to go to human resources, and boom, they were arrested. And over the past year or so, more than 1,000 Hispanic workers, many of them immigrants, many of them illegal immigrants, left the plant. So the plant went from like being 60% Hispanic to about 27% Hispanic today. And, of course, the plant has had to hire many hundreds of people to take those spots.
Interesting. In reading your article, we have the impression sometimes illegal workers are unskilled labor. In a lot of cases, they were among the most skilled workers at the plant.
Yes. As I said, it's a huge plant, and some of the jobs are very basic, you know, just packing ribs into a box. And some of them are very skilled, knowing how to, you know, carve the loin or, God forbid, you know, slit the throats of the hogs. Some of them require a lot of efficiency, a lot of hard work, and take months and even years to really get very good at.
And interestingly, the company has tried to replace these workers, but the turnover normally, these are not pleasant jobs, pretty well paying for the area, but not pleasant jobs. The turnover was about 25-30% per month before, and now it's up to 60%. Steve Greenhouse? We've apparently lost contact with our bureau in New York. We're talking with Steve Greenhouse of the New York Times, the labor and workplace correspondent for that newspaper, who wrote an article in last week's paper called Crackdown Upends Slaughterhouse's Workforce. He describes the town of Tar Heel, North Carolina. Last November, he wrote, immigration officials began a crackdown at Smithfield Foods' giant slaughterhouse here, eventually arresting 21 illegal immigrants at the plant and rousting others from their trailers in the middle of the night. Since then, more than 1,100 Hispanic workers have left the 5,200-employee hog butchering plant, the world's largest, leaving it to struggling to find, train, and keep replacements. We'll reestablish contact with our bureau in New York, but in the meantime, let's talk now with Jack Vesey. Jack Vesey is vice president and marketing director of the his family company grows lettuce, spinach, and broccoli in California's Imperial Valley. He's with us today from his office in Holtville, California. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Good morning, sir. Thank you.
And as I understand it, there has not been an immigration raid on your farm or near your farm yet. You're feeling the effects of it anyway?
Yeah, we are. I mean, what we are seeing is a lot of laborers trying to, I guess you could say, staying away from the area to get as far north as possible, if you will. Our office is 10 miles north of the border, as well as most of our ranches are right along the Mexican-California border. And we find that many of these laborers, they're going to be coming from central Mexico to try to get north or to other locations because of the enforcement we do have here on the border right now.
So would you say that the majority of your workers, the people you need to pick your crops, are illegals?
I don't think they're illegal. They may be falsely documented due to the laws. We do check documents and have to have the I-9s filled out. And, of course, now we have the no-match rule coming into effect as well.
But if they're legal, then you don't have anything to worry about.
No, sir, we don't. We don't have anything to worry about if they're legal. But with the crackdown here on the border, the National Guard, and the time getting across the border, it's becoming very difficult for these people to get across on a daily basis, and we're losing a lot of our workforce.
And as you know, a lot of people, critics, would say, if you just paid people a little bit better, you could get Americans to do this work for you.
Well, we've tried. Our unemployment office, we've gone in there and asked for 300 people a few times and have one person show up. In regards to pay, we are in California. Our minimum wage is higher than most states. And a lot of these people do work on piece rate basis and are making $10-plus dollars an hour, more than our local Walmart, if you will.
So you still can't get enough people?
No, and there's been people that come here down from other areas to hire labor and promise to pay more and different incentives, and it hasn't created more people.
It hasn't created
at all.
It hasn't enlarged the workforce.
No, sir.
Uh-huh. So what's going to happen, and what do you fear will happen if there are even more hurdles put in your way?
We're not going to get our crops harvested. We plant a crop to harvest it, to send it to the market, if you will. And, it's very concerning to us that we're planting these seeds and, we're not 100% sure that they will be harvested.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, this is when you need them, you need them.
Yeah, well, it's a timely matter. When a head of lettuce is ready to be harvested, it's ready that day.
And what's the normal procedure? Where do you go to find the men and I guess the women to pick these crops?
Yeah, we're here in the Imperial Valley on the border. There's much of them come across from Mexicali, Mexico, which is the capital of Baja California. There's a border town called Calexico, California, where many of the laborers will cross in the morning, and there are different pickup locations for our labor buses.
And normally about, when you need them, how many people do you employ?
Indirectly, we use a labor contract as well as the companies that we partner with hire for their own harvest. But indirectly, I would say on a daily basis, anywhere, depending on supply, the demand for the crop, 500 to 1,000 people.
And how many, how much do you pay them, and how many hours do they work per day?
Well, of course, again, we're in California, so the minimum, I believe right now we're at 7-something, going to another 50 cents in January. So they'll be making close to $8. But a lot of this, is piecework, meaning so many cartons per hour, they're paid per carton. And there's a lot of crews that are making $10-plus dollars an hour easily on a daily basis.
So is this a threat to your family business?
Yeah, no, it's a big threat. And, again, now what we're doing is a lot of companies, a lot of my competitors, were looking at mechanization and growing certain crops that lend themselves to mechanized harvest.
Hmm. Jack Vesey, thanks very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
Jack Vesey, Vice President of Vesey & Company, a lettuce grower in California's Imperial Valley, with us by phone today from his office in Holtville, California. Well, if there have been immigration raids in or around communities where you live, what's been the effect on the business and on the town? Have some other ancillary businesses grown, improved? Have they gone out of business? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. I think Steve Greenhouse is with us back from our bureau in New York. Steve, you there?
I hope so.
Okay. I apologize for that technical problem earlier. One of the things you were talking about was the effect on these of these immigration raids. The New York Times had reported on Tar Heel, North Carolina, several years ago as part of a series on tensions between African-American and Hispanic workers in the United States.
Yes. One of our reporters actually worked at the plant for several weeks and wrote about the often uneasy racial relations between the Hispanic workers and the other workers, especially the African-American workers. When the plant first opened in 1992, most of its workers were black. And then starting in the mid-1990s, more and more Hispanic workers, especially immigrant workers, came in. And by 2000 or so, the plant was more or less majority Hispanic.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of African-Americans complained these immigrant workers were taking away jobs from African-Americans.
Yes. But some people also said that, a lot of African-American workers, and white workers and Lumbee Indians as well, got tired of the job. It's a very hard job, very grueling, pretty fast line speed. The pay is good for the area. Now it's about, $11, $12 an hour. But some people, I think, many people, I think, would hesitate to do such a grueling, smelly, job for $11 or $12 an hour.
For example, you cite the case of one woman who has to commute a long bus trip every day from South Carolina to do this job, but she's making more than twice what she used to make changing beds at a day's inn.
I took a bus trip with 12 workers from South Carolina who traveled more than an hour each way to the plant, and they left jobs at Purdue Poultry that paid $7.50 an hour. This other woman was making beds at a day's inn for $5.25 an hour, and now they're making $10, $11, $12 an hour at Smithfield, and it's much better pay. But some of them say, you know, the work is too hard, too smelly, too long a trip. They have to pay $40 a week for the commute, and they some of them are thinking, well, maybe this isn't worth it, which points to the problem that Smithfield and other companies that have been raided face. It's very hard to get enough workers, especially when the nation's unemployment rate is below 5%.
And indeed, the same question we put to Jack Vesey just a minute ago, if they raised wages, people would maybe hold their nose and go ahead and do those jobs.
Yeah, and Jack had a good answer. I mean, you know, he says he's paying $8, $10 an hour. If you pay $11 or $12 an hour, how many native-born Americans are going to want to work out in the hot sun, you know, for $11, $12 an hour? Maybe it would take $20, $25, $30 an hour, which, you know, of course, Mr. Vesey would say is astronomical. But if the nation really wants to run its farms and meatpacking plants without undocumented workers, then it might require a big change in the scenario for them to pay a lot more, which, of course, would mean that consumers might end up having to pay a lot more for their meat, for the pork, for their produce.
This is also, as we'll hear when we return, partly a union issue as well. We'll discuss that when we come back. Stay with us. Steve Greenhouse of the New York Times is with us. We're talking about how the crackdown on illegal immigration changes where you live, not just Tar Heel, North Carolina. Have some businesses expanded, others gone out of work? What's happened after the raids? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing how immigration raids may have changed your town, your city, or your county. In a moment, we'll talk with the mayor of a town where a raid arrested several hundred workers at a meat processing plant. Our guest is Stephen Greenhouse, labor and workplace correspondent for The New York Times. And, of course, we want to hear from you. What's changed where you work or where you live after an immigration raid? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is Ron. Ron's with us from Miami Beach.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I'll tell you, not only the farmers are having a difficult time, but I own a restaurant in Miami Beach. And I have, because of raids, I have lost busboys, dishwashers, maintenance personnel. All of them have decided to stay away. And unfortunately, even though I pay minimum wage and maybe a dollar more than minimum wage, I still can't find Americans to do this type of job. And if I have to, I'm going to have to pass the cost to my clients, to my customers. And I think that's a problem that people aren't realizing. It's not only the farmers which are being affected by these raids, but also smaller business that we depend on cheap labor, if you may, or economical labor in order for us to get our products and our services out to the community.
I wonder, Ron, has there been a raid on your place, or is this as a result of fear of raids?
Actually, in our case, it has been mostly fear. There has never been a raid in our place, but all along the city, there is fear. About a month ago, there was a fear that there was an immigration raid or were going to be immigration raids, and suddenly all of us began to realize that personnel wasn't showing up. And so literally I had to wash dishes and clean toilets because we just didn't have anyone to do it. And it's sad that people are scared to death because of this. And as soon as they hear the raid or they hear the word immigration, or ICE for these automatically. It's a consequence. It's like a train without brakes. You know, it's everybody just starts panicking. Business people don't show up to work. Business gets hurt. And I think as a country, we really need to sit down and analyze what we ought to do in order to correct this mess. I don't blame the undocumented worker. I blame our administration. Since 1986, we just didn't do the right things in order to have a well-organized immigration policy. And I think we're all going to be affected. And if we don't do something about it quickly, I think we all, as Americans, are going to have to learn to pay more for the services that we are accustomed to getting right now.
Ron, thanks very much. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
And Steve Greenhouse, that point Ron was making, that this this is a time now to sit down and figure out what we're going to do. Well, at least in part, that's what these raids are intended to do.
It's not exactly clear that that's what they're intended to do. Some people say that the Bush administration, you know, unhappy that its immigration reform package was defeated, is now trying to make businesses very unhappy and make immigrant communities very unhappy by launching these raids so that, you know, the nation's businesses, like the gentleman in Miami, and the nation's Hispanics and other immigrant groups will push hard in Congress to try to resurrect the immigration bill that was defeated.
Mm-hmm. There is also, you know, theories about, you know, changing people's ideas about the way immigration affects the country. If suddenly prices go up and the economy is hurt, maybe people will change their minds.
Yes. I mean, I find it very interesting listening to the restaurant owner in Miami. Clearly, he makes the point that, you know, thanks to immigration, including illegal immigration, the American economy has been able to grow faster. His restaurant has been able to expand thanks to cheap labor, often illegal immigrant labor. Same probably with Jack Vesey in California. His farm was probably able to expand faster than it might have. So clearly we hear a lot of people complaining about the bad things that illegal immigration does, but a lot of business owners and a lot of economists say, well, wait a second, illegal immigration has in many ways helped the American economy.
Let's talk now with Jessica. Jessica's on the line with us from Kannapolis in North Carolina.
Hello?
Hi, Jessica. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Well, Kannapolis is right outside of Charlotte here, and I am an American citizen, but I am Hispanic, and my husband is born from he is a permanent resident. And being that we live outside of Charlotte, we read the Spanish-speaking newspapers, and we see that they're actually having a lot of raids in apartment buildings and not even businesses anymore. And so we have a lot of people, being an American citizen, I have them come up and ask me, well, what am I supposed to do? What can I do over here? And I also see a lot of, you know, I live in a small town, a lot of resentment from non-Hispanic people towards me and my children, which is really upsetting to me, is that, you know, we're trying to live our lives and be happy, and I'm sorry, it's emotional for us, but it's
okay.
You know, being made feel like we're less because of the color of our skin, and it's just very frustrating, you know, because, yes, there is a bad element, but bad elements are everywhere, and there's good. My husband did come in illegally, and he did become legal, and he is a hardworking man. He just got off a disability for a carpal tunnel in his hand for working every single day, 12 hours a day, and they would not pay workers' comp for us, so we had to go on disability. And people see that. People don't see that there are people that that the majority are very hardworking and are looking to better their lives and better their family. They just see the way that it is for them, and it just hurts me that, you know, that in effect my children get bad looks from neighbors now, kids who used to be their friends because of the raids. Their parents don't let them be their friends anymore. And that upsets me more than anything because, you know, that's just ignorance, you know, and I don't think it's fair or it's right. You know, I understand that, you know, people have lost their jobs, but I think Kannapolis is a great example where a factory, you know, got shut down and it was sent overseas, and now they're having a new biotechnology set campus made here, and a huge amount of growth is being made here because of it, you know, and I just think that people need to realize, you know, there are bad eggs. Yes, there are, like in every group, but the majority are very hardworking people who do love this country and, you know, left their homes, their family and everything to come here to better their lives, you know, and do better for them. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Jessica. Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. I know it's not easy to talk about.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Steve Greenhouse, well, part of your story was also, as she was talking about, the human price of some of these raids.
Yeah. I interviewed a lot of people whose family members were arrested and faced deportation. Many of the workers had worked at the Smithfield plant 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and you know they're clearly dedicated, good workers, or else they probably would not have been at the plant anymore. And they're arrested, and you know some are leaving wives with 3, 4 little kids. I interviewed this woman, Sandy Avila, whose mother had worked at the plant for 8, 9, 10 years. She was arrested when immigration agents came banging at the trailer at 4 in the morning in August. And now Sandy Avila says, you know, all we want to do is work hard, take care of our families, raise our families. And, you know, she feels that they're being victimized. Now, of course, you know, many Americans say, well, we can't feel much sympathy for them. They're here illegally. Why should we feel sympathy for them? They're taking away jobs from us.
Yep.
And these are Mexican workers just trying to make it.
Joining us now is Tom Selders, the mayor of Greeley, Colorado, where U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers raided a Swift & Company meatpacking factory last December. And, Mayor, nice of you to join us today.
Yes, I appreciate the opportunity to be on and chat with you a bit.
Okay. How many people were arrested back in that raid?
You know, it's been a while, so the numbers aren't exactly with me, but I think it was around 300, maybe a little less than 300.
And what's happened to the business and to the community afterwards?
Well, the business affected was Swift & Company, and they're a huge company, and they recently sold to another Brazilian company who's pumping some money into it and making it grow. In fact, they've added a second shift. So as a big company, they've recovered okay, although they said they lost about $30 million because of the disruption of the raids in December.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as a company, they're okay, and they're hiring additional people. They are having to go outside of the immediate area to find those people, however. But they offer some pretty good jobs, so I think they're on their way to getting back to be fully staffed again. But, you know, the raids in December did create a lot of turmoil. Right after that raid, we had a huge snowstorm here, the worst we've had in years, and that just, you know, compounded the problems and made things worse.
In what way? I mean, what's been, when you say it's had a bad effect on the community, for instance?
Well, you know, we ended up with families that were disrupted. I heard one of the callers in just a little bit ago talk about that effect in her community.
Yeah, Jessica.
And,
yeah.
You know, it happened here where we had maybe a mother and children that were left behind. The dad was deported, and so there was no way for them to, you know, some of these workers were hauled off without even the opportunity to leave a paycheck with their with the rest of their family. So it disrupted them. I know our United Way here had an effort, and they had a couple $100,000 of money that was donated to them, and they went through that pretty fast, giving out some grants to some folks that needed it for food or heat in their homes. So we had that kind of disruption, and to this day, I know there's there's still some families that are separated and kids that have been impacted. Although over the months, I think probably most of them have figured out something to do or have moved away or gone back to their native country.
Mm-hmm.
But the effects are still there, and it's, you know, it just created a big division in our community that unfortunately is still there.
Still there. You know, of course, some people would say that, you know, if this big company, Swift & Company, suffered $30 million in losses, well, maybe that was an indirect penalty for looking the other way, not paying too close attention when they hired their people.
Well, you could say that. However, Swift & Company's position, and I've seen a lot of things written about this, they were cooperating to their fullest with the federal government. Swift is one of the original participators in the pilot program, the basic pilot program, and they had actually been in the position of asking a lot of questions and got slapped on the hand from the feds for asking too many questions.
Hmm.
And they had gone to the federal government and said, you know, we think we've got workers here who are using false identities, and we'd like to try to do something about it. And the government just basically ignored them, and they said, no, you can only ask the questions that are allowed and you have to rely on what the basic pilot program says. Well, it had a lot of discrepancies, as we've come to find out.
Yeah.
So I think that Swift was used as any, you know, they were used by the government. And there was a big press conference about all the great things that these raids had done. And I think that they...
Well, it sounds like from your point of view, you wish it never happened.
Well, I wish it never happened. And, you know, I'm for enforcing the laws, and we have certainly criminals in our community that some of whom, maybe 10% of all the crimes are committed by illegal people. And, you know, they should be deported. We have no no room in our society for drug trafficking or any kind of violent crimes or any kind of crimes, and so we need to deal with them. But what my concern is that the government doesn't have the resources to deal with everything, so they should concentrate on the criminals and not go after those hard workers who, granted, maybe they don't have the proper paperwork, or they were on a visa and that visa expired. Sure, there has some of that, but let's take care of the bad guys first, and then worry about the others. And so my concern is that, you know, to make a big example, to make a splash, the government did this raid on these people that were employed, were working and contributing to our economy and providing a living for themselves.
Mayor,
they did that at the expense of what they really ought to be doing.
Mayor, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
You bet. Good to talk to you.
Tom Selders, mayor of Greeley, Colorado, where there was an immigration raid on Swift & Company last December, with us by phone from Greeley, Colorado. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Steve Greenhouse, it's interesting. The meatpacking industry is subject to a lot of these raids because there are believed to be a lot of illegal immigrants working in the industry. Yet what the mayor was saying, if there had been a consistent pattern of enforcement over the years, some of these problems may not be emerging now.
You know, that's a legitimate point. You know, when the big new immigration law was passed in 1986, companies were forbidden from hiring illegal immigrants. But if they made a good faith effort to make sure that the workers had proper documents, then they could hire whoever came in. But they, you know, good faith effort, you know, a lot of them just kind of looked for half a second and didn't mind that the documents were fake. So we've seen millions and millions of undocumented workers hired over the years. And now we have all these Americans clamoring for crackdown, let's get rid of all these illegal immigrants, and the government is sort of listening. And, you know, from the remarks we've heard from the mayor, from the restaurant owner, from the farmer in California, we're seeing that, you know, the huge disruption that this causes. And as the caller from North Carolina said, you know, Kannapolis, she said, you know, unfortunately, a lot of Hispanic citizens who are born here are being treated as if they're not, you know, good for nothing illegal immigrants, and that they're feeling a lot of the brunt of it as well.
Let's see if we get another caller in. This is John. John with us from Vallejo in California.
Yes, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I certainly want to take issue with the mayor of Greeley, who was on the radio just a moment ago, in that going after the criminals first, and this isn't really the reason I called, but it's a good segue, is that going after the criminals first violates the adage that a bird in hand is worth two in the bush. I mean, if you've got somebody for whatever reason and they're here illegally, they should be put in a detention facility and taken out of the country as quickly as possible. I find it unconscionable, and for 30 years, as I'm now getting into my later time in life, wondered where was our country, the United States, at greatest risk, even during the Cold War period, and I could not come down with anything other than the fact that we would be taken over internally, predominantly by people who were going to come here unannounced and unwelcome and then get onto the gravy train, which I see every day at work. I'm in a healthcare profession, it's a retail side of it, and every day a third of the customers that I have to deal with in a community like Napa, for example, they come trying to get their prescriptions filled. They get the prescriptions filled with a year's worth of refills every month from one of the local clinics, and then after that, they come to me and look at me like I'm from Mars because I don't speak Spanish. We don't have anybody in the staff that speaks Spanish, and because of the labor laws in place, you can't take people out of a specific position and put someone else in there because they speak a foreign language. But it takes more time to process these people. You can't, consult with them in any way to get them to take their medications correctly. And I'll be damned if I'm going to, in my own country, have to speak a foreign language to deal with customers that are coming in that don't speak English. I mean,
John, thanks very much. I'm afraid we're up against the clock, but we appreciate the phone call. We're going to continue this conversation. What's happened in your town or your community after immigration raids? We'll also be speaking with Eboot Patel about a post 9/11 sitcom that's surprisingly funny. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Our guest is Stephen Greenhouse, labor and workplace correspondent for The New York Times. And our email, if you'd like to join us that way, is talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Steve Greenhouse, we were talking about the effect on workers a lot. How are companies responding to this? These changes?
Some companies are shell-shocked. A poultry company in Georgia lost two-thirds of its workforce because of immigration raids back last December, and it started hiring homeless people. It started hiring people fresh out of prison. And this is in Georgia, and it started recruiting Hmong refugees from Minneapolis, and it increased its wages from $7 an hour to $9 an hour. Smithfield, which lost many Hispanic immigrant workers, has been running big television ads throughout the North Carolina trying to recruit workers as well. Swift is giving a $1,500 bonus to new workers and to current workers who help recruit new workers.
So in response, I guess some people say, in effect, they are trying to pay more or at least advertise themselves as a good, safe place to work.
Yes, some are paying more and some are in ways trying to avoid paying more by doing recruiting. They're casting the net wider to try to find workers.
Well, let's see if we get another caller in. This is Jose. Jose with us from Chicago.
Yeah, my name's Jose, and I want to give a couple of examples to frame my argument. First of all, in Chicago suburbs, we had two recent cases where their no-match letters were used to lay off dozens of workers, one at a place called Cygnus in South Chicago and one at a plant called owned by Balco in Aurora. And in both cases, documented workers, people who are citizens here, decide to walk out in protest and join the undocumented workers who were fired on picket lines outside. And I think that this is indicative of what workers on the ground understand. This is not an issue, and this is my main argument. This is not an issue, and it shouldn't be framed as an issue about business and labor. We shouldn't, and this goes for the defenders and the detractors as well and stuff. We shouldn't talk about this as jobs that local people won't take, because that's a way to divide workers. That's what they said about Italians, Irish, Polish. That's what they said about countless European immigrants 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 20 years ago, even today. They're using the same argument to divide workers today. And at the same time, it is, and Jessica was the best example of this. This is an issue about human rights. This is not an issue about business and how it affects business, because on that we will win. Immigrant rights activists will win that argument time and time again. You look at any town that carried out lots of deportations or made it harder for immigrants to live there, and those towns are falling to pieces. The businesses are closing. But in the end of the day, this is actually an issue about humans. Human rights, workers' rights, and how people are taking it.
Jose, let me clarify for just a moment. The no-match letters have sent out by the government to say the Social Security numbers you're sending don't appear to match to the identities of the workers that were given, i.e., we suspect that they are here illegally. And Steve Greenhouse in Tar Heel, North Carolina, the issue there was framed in terms of, a union issue as well.
Yes. Ever since the plant opened in 1992, the union, the United Food and Commercial Workers, has tried to unionize the plant. And these raids have come, these no-match letters have come in the past year, and some people say, the federal government is in bed with the company to try to push out the union. The federal government denies that. The company denies that. But in ways, the raids, the no-match letters are hurting the union because it's increased the fear among the Hispanic workers. They're more scared to stand up. And a lot of the union supporters have like the other Hispanic workers have grown so scared that they've left.
And what about Jose's other point that some ancillary businesses, restaurants, beauty parlors, that kind of thing, they've been adversely affected by these too?
Jose is absolutely right. In ways, the raids have so-called called the question. These are among the, you know, least desirable jobs in the country, working in meatpacking plants, doing harvesting, you know, making hotel beds. It's not surprising that a lot of native-born Americans do not want those jobs. Americans do not raise their kids to make hotel beds or work in meatpacking plants generally. And, you know, to fill these least desirable jobs, the companies often bring in or are happy to hire undocumented workers. An interesting thing is in the 1980s, when meatpacking plants were largely unionized, they paid $12, $14, $15 an hour. That's what they pay now. They've become largely deunionized. It would be interesting if the plants were paying $25 an hour. I think a lot of Americans would be happy to work there, and maybe all these plants would not have had to hire, would not have turned to undocumented workers over the past decade or two.
Hmm. Jose, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. And we'd like to thank Steve Greenhouse for his time. He's the workplace and labor correspondent for the New York Times with us today from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program again, Steve.
My pleasure, Neil. Thank you.
Coming up, we'll be talking on the opinion page.